Welcome to the Here and Beyond podcast with international psychic medium and psychic investigator Mark Howard, bringing you the latest in paranormal news, updates, and stories from around the world. Now, here's your host, Mark Howard.
The 1960s were strange and heated times for popular culture. Mind-expanding music, films, and substances were spawning some crazy ideas, and none were crazier than the story of a legendary musician and the mystery surrounding his true identity. Paul McCartney has been one of the most famous people in the world for over 50 years. First as one quarter of the greatest pop band in history, the Beatles, then for a successful 40-year solo career, featuring a string of hit singles and albums. The Beatles' expansive music and surreal lyrics had always inspired theories and speculation amongst their fans, but by the height of their fame in the late 60s, a weird rumours beginning to form from college campus to the mainstream media. The band's bassist and joint songwriter Paul McCartney was, in fact, dead. This came as news to McCartney himself, who in 1969, when the stories of his death reached fever pitch, appeared to be walking around alive and well. But was the man going by that name truly the same Paul McCartney who first charmed filmgoers with his fellow bandmates John Lennon, Ringo Starr and George Harrison in the 1964 classic A Hard Day's Night? Was the man walking barefoot across the Abbey Road crossing in the most famous album cover ever produced really the same man who wrote pop classics like I Want to Hold Your Hand and Yesterday? Apparently not, as far as the conspiracy went. The central tenet of the Paul is Dead theory was that sometime in the late 1966, McCartney was killed in a tragic car accident. Determined not to end the most profitable and successful band in history, the management drafted in a lookalike to masquerade as the deceased Beatle and keep the money-making juggernaut intact. As weird as it may sound, proponents of the theory managed to find dozens of inexplicable references in the Beatles' songs and album covers following Paul's supposed demise that appeared to be hinting that something really had happened to the bassist. Was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band a coded confession of the truth? Did the Walrus for I Am the Walrus, who John identified as Paul in his song Glass Onion, represent death? And why, if you play the White Album's track Revolution 9 backwards, can you hear the words, "Turn me on, dead man"? While some of the music analysts looks fanciful, according to believers, the photographic evidence clinches their case. The McCartney of the late 60s, they argue, of Sgt. Pepper and the Abbey Road fame is clearly not the same man of the early mid-60s, the era of Please Please Me and Help. Paul certainly appears to look different in some photographs between these two parts of the 60s. But were these differences merely the natural changes in a young man's face as he fluctuates in weight and grows older, or something more sinister? Advocates of the Paul is Dead theory maintain that the photographic anomalies are because we are looking at two different men, one the original Paul of the early 60s, and the other his replacement, a McCartney lookalike named variously William Campbell, William Shepherd, and Billy Shears. The first ramblings that something may have happened to Paul McCartney in December 1965, when he was involved in a much publicised moped accident while visiting his family in Liverpool. The injuries sustained in this crash, especially Paul's broken tooth, were clearly still evident in the video for The Rain and paperback writer filmed in 1966. Another accident occurred on the 7th of January 1967 when McCartney's black Mini Cooper was written off in a crash on the M1 near London. However, the official story has it that the car was driven by a student, at the time and not McCartney. It seems that these two relatively mundane instances were becoming mangled across multiple retellings, spawning the far more sensational rumour that Paul had actually died in a car accident. Shortly afterwards, Beatles Monthly magazine attempted to squash the rumours by issuing a false report about the latter accident, dismissing any notion that there had been any crash at all, and stating not only was Paul alive and well, but his Mini Cooper car was perfectly intact. Was this false story designed to hide the tragic truth, that Paul had really died? Whatever the truth, the Beatles story always unfolded in fast forward, and the two episodes were quickly forgotten amidst a torrent of other tabloid stories about the exploits of the Fab Four.
Knowing where you're going in life can help give you a sense of clarity and well-being. International psychic medium Mark Howard offers all types of readings to help guide, give you direction and clarity. From email readings, photo readings, quick WhatsApp questions, through to personal face-to-face consultations, Mark has helped clients in over 19 countries around the world. And if you're looking to expand your own gifts, Mark can help you there too, with dedicated online courses to get you started from psychic development, Reiki, and even learning how to read tarot. Why not visit Mark's website today at markhoward.co.za and see what the future has in store for you.
Apart from the odd piece of drug-fueled chatter during the swinging London parties, the rumors about McCartney did not reemerge until 1969. When the whole idea that Paul was dead took off in a sensational fashion, gaining such credence in the mainstream media that it even spawned an extraordinary mock trial on American TV prosecuted by famous attorney F. Lee Bailey. Much of the initial credit for Paul is Dead Free belongs to a student at the Michigan University called Fred LeBoer. LeBoer began to write about the idea in late 69, initially inspired by a program on local radio where a Beatles fan named Tom Sarsky had phoned in claiming not only that Paul McCartney was dead, but that a sinister clue to this was hidden in the White Album track Revolution 9. Following the call of this instruction, the disc jockey at the Michigan's WKNR-FM, Russ Gibb, played a portion of the song backwards live on air, stunning his listeners by revealing the apparent secret message, "Turn Me On, Dead Man." The LeBoer's subsequent article for the Michigan student newspaper, "McCartney's Dead, New Evidence Brought to Light," cemented many of the key facets of the legend. Detailed were Paul's death in a car crash during the recording of Sgt. Pepper in late 66, the clues left on the album covers, the backward messages in the band's songs, and the imposter William Shepard. From here was born the whole feverish Paul is Dead craze of 1969, which prompted obsessive analysts of every inch of the Beatles' music for more clues. Much speculation in the press and the aforementioned TV trial. Paul himself was even put into the position of being called out in the national media to prove if he was still alive. As is necessary for any good conspiracy, suspicious deaths were also added to the brew. The untimely early demise of such prominent Beatles-related figures as their manager Brian Epstein, roadie Mal Evans, and even John Lennon himself all linked to the plot. Were they taken out to prevent them from revealing the dark truth about Paul? Of course, most sensible people dismissed all of this as wild nonsense. The band had already admitted to deliberately putting gibberish references in their songs to tease fans and mind-bending theories about the increasing psychedelic and cryptic output of the musicians, like the Beatles were rife throughout the 60s. Such speculation, critics argue, was the inevitable consequences of fandom and press desperate for any scrap of news about the Beatles. Once the real news ran out, the temptation to start inventing new news must have been overwhelming for journalists, knowing anything about the Fab Four related would sell more and more papers. Some even suspected the Beatles themselves were put behind the rumours, deliberately concocting as a way to bolster album sales. Although, as the most successful band in history who continually broke sales and records, it doesn't seem like they would really need the extra PR at this time. Most of the evidence offered up was subjective and tenuous, that it would prove nothing either way. But what of the incredible claims of the two Italian forensic scientists in 2009 studied photographs of McCartney during the 60s included the man claimed to be the famous musician post 66? Was not the same fresh pop mop top who sang Love Me Do in 1963. Could the most outlandish of the 60s conspiracy theories actually be true, that Paul McCartney is in fact dead? Whilst the idea that Paul was replaced with a lookalike sounds like the far-fetched plot of a comic book, there is in fact a long documented history of the use of doubles in politics, espionage and entertainment. Hitler and Stalin employed multiple doubles, both as a decoy in case of assassination attempts and simply to do the mundane legwork of a busy dictator in the era before mass communication. Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein took the idea to a new level, routinely utilising lookalikes to disguise his true whereabouts, especially as his paranoia grew in the aftermath of the 1991 Gulf War. Perhaps the most famous case of a double in modern times involved British World War II General Bernard Montgomery. The soldier Abby Clifton, who bore a strong resemblance to Montgomery, was recruited by British intelligence to act as a decoy for the general. Clifton then made special trips to Gibraltar and Algiers in the guise of Monty, specifically to be seen and trailed by German intelligence so as to mislead them about the Allied invasion plans. In the sphere of entertainment, impersonator Michael Clayton bore such an uncanny resemblance to the comedian and actor Robin Williams that he was able to successfully pose as a star and attend gigs and events using his identity. By 2005, Williams would be forced to sue Clayton in order to stop the deception. In 1968, hundreds of excited Andy Warhol fans attended his much-publicized speaking tour of American universities. What most of them didn't realize until the hoax was exposed, after the fact, that it was not Warhol they were paid to see, but actor and official double, Alan Midget. In the world of music, a homeless man named Christopher Dickinson successfully passed himself off as former KISS drummer Peter Criss for a time in the 1990s. Dickinson was living on the streets in Santa Monica, where he began claiming to be Criss, convincing a string of prominent celebrities and KISS fans to rally around and get him back onto his feet. This came as a surprise to the real Peter Criss, living happily with his wife and daughter, and somewhat taken back at the rumours he'd fallen on such hard times.
Is your online business going nowhere, or are you just lost within the internet maze? At the Digital Marketing Hub, we are expert in digital marketing for your online business. Creating websites that bring in visitors, implementing systems that turn these visitors into customers, along with social integrated training to teach you how to generate repeat business and increase sales. To get out of the internet maze, visit our website www.digitalmarketinghub.co.za and start getting customers today.
In the light of these and many similar stories, is it really so unlikely that Paul McCartney we see today is an imposter? Of course, such a prospect would far outstrip all other documented examples of doubles in history, both for its duration and the intense scrutiny it had to withstand. The fake Paul is now in his mid-70s, meaning he has spent far longer in the part than the original ever did, all the time as one of the most photographed, filmed and studied men in history. Is there any evidence amongst this vast catalogue of documentary evidence to back up this incredible story? There are many thousands of photographs taken of McCartney during his 60s heyday in the Beatles. If the rumours that he was replaced with an imposter in 1966 are really true, then there must be evidence for it, at least in some of these images. Paul is dead for his point to late 1966 and early 1967 as the first appearance of the fake Paul, or Fool as they called him. During this time, McCartney seemed to rapidly lose the round, slight, chubby face he had in the early 60s and sports a longer, slightly gaunter, more angle of his arch. Was this too many late nights partying and taking drugs, catching up with the singer, or an obvious indication that he had been replaced with William Shepherd, a lookalike who was thinner than him? Other details appear to set the two eras of McCartney apart. In 1967, Paul had thinner lips and a longer, thinner nose, as well as a flatter, less arched eyebrows. Most telling, the latter Paul McCartney seems to sport detached earlobes, whereas the earlier models are attached. Bearing some unknown surgical procedure or accident, it's not quite clear how this could be the case. Ferris also points out to other photographs during the 67 Paul to be noticeably taller than his predecessor. Pictures taken of the singer with his long-term girlfriend Jane Asher in 67 appear to show Paul several inches taller than Asher. Similar side-by-side shots of the pair from 67 shows Paul to be much closer in height to the actress. Amateur photo analysis is, however, a dangerous business. People could look very different in different pictures for a whole variety of entirely natural reasons. Countless other factors such as the lens, lighting, perspective, and cropping can also make a photo look different. For this reason, Paul Isdead advocates point to the startling conclusion of two Italian forensic scientists to bolster their claims. In 2009, Francesco Gavazzani and Gabriella Calessi conducted a biometric analysis of the images taken of the beetle both before and after 66 for what was originally intended to be a piece debunking the conspiracy theories. To their surprise, the scientists found measurements of the shape of the skull, the jaw, the curve of the jaw, the ear, the palate and teeth displayed the marked differences between the pools, leading them to conclude with a high degree of probability that they were in fact two different men. Of all the evidence offered for the Paul Isdead theory, perhaps what has captured the fans' most imagination since 1969 is the analysis of the various clues that appear to be hidden in the Beatles' music and album covers. From secret messages that can only be heard when the band's songs are played backwards, to cryptic references in the album covers, theorists have pointed out dozens of subtle and not so subtle hints in the Beatles' output that seems to be suggesting something terrible had happened to the real Paul. The first record alleged to feature the replacement Paul McCartney was the 1967 Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Club Band, said to contain a number of clues and references to the original Paul's recent death. Much heralded as one of the most successful concert albums, it saw the Beatles taking on the guise of Sgt. Pepper's Band. Was this a direct reference to them leaving behind the old Beatles, featuring the now dead McCartney behind? On the album's cover, the new Beatles in their psychedelic outfits can be seen stood in front of what looks like a grave, with the band's name depicted in flowers. Alongside the name is a reef in the shape of a left-handed guitar, the same orientation the original Paul famously played. Directly below the central figure of Paul is the words "Hearts," written on the bass drum. When a mirror is placed horizontally, dividing the word in half, it reads, "He die." Could this really be a spooky coincidence, or the product of an overactive imagination? And what to make of the reverse cover of the Sgt. Pepper, with the image of the four Beatles in their elaborate costumes, with only Paul in the band stood with his back to the viewer? There is no obvious reason why only Paul is singled out like this, but as we shall see, it will become a recurring theme in future releases. Beyond the cover, Sgt. Pepper makes exclusive use of the studio technology to create complex soundscapes using multiple track vocals and backward masking. Whilst it was not uncommon for musicians of the era to use backwards vocals, the Beatles themselves used them before on singles like Rain. Fans believe Sgt. Pepper marks the start of a whole series of specific references to Paul's death in the band's music. Perhaps one of the best known is the 1968 track Revolution 9, which, if played backward, has one part that sounds a lot like a violent car crash, and a voice that could be made out to be saying, "He hit a pole, better get him to see a surgeon." The supposed audio clues didn't stop there. Play "I'm So Tired" backwards, and you get a recorded phrase that sounds kind of like "Paul is dead, miss him, miss him, miss him." Slow down "Strawberry Fields Forever," and you can hear John saying, "I buried Paul." However, in subsequent interviews, Lennon has explained that the phrase was actually "cranberry sauce." The closing track, "A Day in the Life," is often regarded as Lennon McCartney's finest collaboration, but does the lyric "He blew his mind out in a car" reference Paul's decapitation in a fatal car crash during the album's recording? 1967 proved to be incredibly fruitful creativity for the Beatles, with or without the real Paul, and the success continued with the Magical Mystery Tour later in the year. Originally released as a double EP and Christmas holiday TV special, the surreal psychedelic work has reaped rich rewards for Paul instead of proponents in the search for more evidence for their theory. John Lennon's "I Am the Walrus," with its nonsense Lewis Carroll-esque lyrics, was always rife for interaction, and Paul would quickly become identified by fans with the walrus of the title. Lennon playfully encouraged such rumours on his follow-up track "Glass Onion," in which he teases, "Here's another clue for you all, Walrus was Paul." It is frequently cited in Paul Isdead conspiracy theories that there was a dark hint that Paul's fate, as wars, are often used as symbols of death in folklore. Whatever the case, Paul became so identified with Animal that he would be invited to play one 20 years later in the video for George Harrison's When We Was Fab. The video for Paul's song Your Mother Should Know contains what will become a running theme in the Beatles' remaining albums, the singling out of Paul as somehow different to his fellow bandmates. In the video, staged as an old school song and dance number, John, George and Ringo are in tuxedos with a red rose in the lapel. However, Paul sports a black rose instead, a flower more closely associated with death. What's interesting about this particular clue is that Paul went out of his way to specifically deny it had any significance at all. In a 1969 Life interview, he dismisses the strange disparity with a mundane explanation. During the filming, they had simply run out of flowers, so he had to pick a black one. For some reason yet unknown, it looks like Paul is lying about this. McCartney was actually the uncredited director of the entire sequence, in which he's clearly seen been handed a huge bouquet of red flowers while supporting the discordant black flower in his lapel. It could not therefore have been a sorcerer's of props, as he claimed, only a deliberate choice. Hi, this is Mark Howard, and I'd like you to take a peek at my new book, Here and Beyond, The Paranormal Files. The accounts and stories outlined in my new book are those that I have featured on my paranormal radio show, Here and Beyond, includes over 50 of what I believe to be some of the most exciting and fascinating stories from across the paranormal community, including those from the US, the UK, South Africa and Australia. I've also included my own personal accounts from paranormal investigation on those places I was fortunate enough to investigate in the past. These accounts are not widely made public and gives you a sneak insight to some of the paranormal investigations carried out as a psychic medium. My book, Here and Beyond, The Paranormal Files, is available now on Amazon Kindle and paperback or direct from my website, www.markhoward.co.za. There wasn't much for the fans to dissect on the cover of their next release, the 1968's The Beatles, with its all-white cover. But the sprawling double album features several more instances of backwards vocals. Revolution 9, much mocked as the most skipped song in music history, and perhaps the only track played more often backwards than forwards, seems to be the Rosetta Stone of the Paul is Dead mythology. Whilst it admittedly takes some imagination to hear, one segment of Revolution 9 played in reverse does sound very much like Turn Me On Dead Man, which to fans looked like a reference to Paul, who famously sang, I'd Love to Turn You On in A Day in the Life the previous year. Another song on the album, Lennon's I'm So Tired, ends with a piece of spoken gibberish that for its belief says Paul is dead, miss him, miss him, miss him when played backwards. Whilst the rare self-penned Ringo effort, Don't Pass Me By, has the drummer singing about a lost friend who died in a car crash, just as Paul has said to have been done. Moving on to 1969, the band released Abbey Road with its iconic Ian McMillan photograph of the musicians crossing the street near London's Abbey Road studios, coinciding as it did with the growing rumours that Paul's death reaching critical mass scored the cover for more clues. As was becoming customary, Paul is again depicted different from the other Beatles, being the only one of the four walking across the road barefoot. Was this, as many suggested, a reference to the traditional practice in which many cultures bury the dead barefooted, and another hint from the band that Paul was in fact dead? Further to the idea, in the background of the shot is a parts VW Beetle car with a number plate containing 28IF. Could this be another hint from the band about Paul, the Beetle who died in a car crash and would have been in his 28th year if he had lived? To complete the theme of death, McMillan frames the men in a way that resembles a funeral procession, with Ringo even dressed uncanny like an undertaker for added measure. The album cover of Let It Be, the band's final release in 1970, again singles out Paul for special attention. Whilst John, George and Ringo are all looking forward on a white background, Paul is staring directly at the viewer, framed by a red backdrop. Is this yet another reference to the bloody demise of the original Paul McCartney in 1966? The problem with a lot of these types of conspiracies is that people read too much into things that are not really there. And this can be the case for this podcast. If Paul McCartney was replaced by Bill Shepherd back in the 1960s, then he has lived the longest double life ever known to date. Regardless of seeing the original Paul McCartney or a stand-in, we still must consider the music and song writings that this man has given us all these years, and that cannot be taken away. The last words on this subject should be left to the man himself. In 1969, when asked about the conspiracy of him being dead, Paul replied, "I would not want to spoil their fantasy."
You have been listening to Mark Howard on The Paranormal Show, here and beyond. Tune in the same time next week or visit Mark's site, www.markhoward.co.za, for more paranormal stories.